Thank you for listening to the Spectrum of Health podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Christine Schaffner, and today my guest is Dr. Gregory Kelly with the Neurohacker Collective. We're going to be talking all about synbiotics, emerging next generation probiotics for gut brain support. A little bit about Dr. Gregory Kelly. He's the director of product development at Neurohacker Collective. He's also a fellow naturopathic physician and author of the book Shapeshift. He was the editor of the Journal of Alternative Medicine Review and has been an instructor at the University of Bridgeport in the College of Naturopathic Medicine, where he taught classes in advanced clinical nutrition, counseling skills, and doctor-patient relationships. Dr. Kelly has published hundreds of articles on natural medicine and nutrition, contributed 3 chapters to the textbook of natural medicine, and has more than 30 journal articles indexed on PubMed. His areas of expertise include nootropics, anti-aging, regenerative medicine, weight management, sleep, and the chronobiology of performance and health, and also the gut ecosystem. So I hope you enjoy this really informative podcast today with Dr. Gregory Kelly. Welcome, Dr. Greg. It's an honor to have you on the podcast.
Oh, thanks so much for having me as a guest today. I look forward to having this great conversation.
Yeah, you know, I know that you are the, you know, vice president of product development for Neurohacker, and you've created so many great products for the industry. And, you know, this is a new term for people, and this is kind of a, you know, often talked about topic, but I know we're just getting deeper and deeper with our knowledge, you know, on the gut-brain connection. And so, you know, for those who are new to kind of the word symbiotic, do you want to give us just your impression of what a symbiotic is?
Yeah, so I think just stepping back to biotic. So biotic, whenever you see that term, it roughly comes from a word that means in favor of life. And probably almost everyone in the world knows the antibiotic aspect, right? Something anti is against. So kind of against life, right? Those are things that kill bacteria specifically. The next term that was largely used in is probiotic, and the idea of probiotics goes back to someone named Metchnikoff more than 100 years ago, naturopaths like you and I, big fans of probiotics, but pro means in favor, so kind of the opposite of anti. And then the next biotic that emerged was prebiotic, right? And pre, you know, means coming before, but the way prebiotics, you know, simply are food for the organisms in our They supply the energy. So in our world where you and I live, it's sunlight that supplies the energy for ecosystems. In the gut microbiome, the energy comes from things that make it there. So prebiotic fibers being one of the big ones. And then the most recent biotic is something called postbiotic. And post means after. And technically, postbiotics are probiotic organisms that have been somehow inactivated. So sterilized, pasteurized, you name it, so that they're no longer alive. And either those intact cells, the broken up cells, basically the debris, those would be postbiotic. And symbiotic means, and it's S-Y-N instead of S-Y-M for the listeners, syn means together. And so the idea as originally was that a symbiotic was something that combined pre and probiotics together to have that almost think synergistic impact. So, and the reason I think that's super important to do both together, and I'm a big fan of probiotics, right? I've used them. I graduated as a naturopath in 1996, you know, and have used probiotics quite a bit over, you know, the many years. And even before that, when I traveled and naturopaths told me what to do. And so probiotics are great. But the analogy I give, and I often have to explain things to our marketing department, right? And our head of marketing happens to have 2 young daughters. She takes them to San Diego Zoo quite frequently. So I put it in the context of a zoo. So we'll see if that works for you and your listeners.
Yeah, that's perfect.
So, you know, think of, like, you know, going back to some of those biotics, think of the gut microbiome. And a biome is basically the habitat something lives in, and the biota are what the actual living things in it. So if you were to think of something like the gut microbiome, that's the habitat, right? All the things that live in it plus everything else that lives there. And the microbiota are specifically the living things. So in the San Diego Zoo metaphor, think of the zoo as the microbiome, right? Like that's the biome. That's where everything that in that ecosystem lives. And the biota in a zoo would be the animals and plants that live there, the people like you and I, if we visited, you know, the workers. So most people think probiotics are like putting more animals in the zoo, but they're not. And it's because of something called colonization resistance. You and I have a really unique individual zoo, so to speak.
Yeah.
And when we take probiotics, they're more like the workers in the zoo and the visitors that are passing through every day. So super important to make sure the zoo stays healthy, because if we took all the people out of zoo that work and visited, the ecosystem would not do very well, right? So when you think of probiotics, these aren't things that put more animals in the cages, but they are putting more traffic through the zoo, so to speak. And part of the reason prebiotics are important is not only do they feed the animals that live in the zoo, but we also need food for the guests that are visiting the zoo as well, right? So that's why it's so important to do the symbiotic combination, to give energy, you know, in terms of prebiotics when we're also doing probiotics. Otherwise, we're kind of adding more traffic into the zoo with no more food. So we, you know, run the risk of starving what's actually there trying to live and thrive in that ecosystem.
That's a great analogy. And I think many people who take probiotics think that they're just replenishing their microbiome with more biota. You know, I think that is often the analogy that people are thinking, just because, you know, our understanding, I know in our career, in our lifetime, is just evolved dramatically of our understanding of the gut ecosystem and, you know, all of what it entails. So I think that's a really good perspective and just frame shift. And one of the things that I'm just thinking as you're talking is, you know, I have a SIBO patient. She just told me the other day that, you know, she started to eat resistant starch because her diet was so limited. And, you know, she's seen like adding some resistant starches have actually changed and shifted, you know, a next level of how, you know, she's experiencing her symptoms. And, you know, it exactly made me think of like, yeah, we have to actually, you know, to create that environment that for these biota to thrive, we have to nurture, feed, you know, support and nourish rather than just replace, kill the bugs, replace the bugs, kill the bug. You know, there's way more to the story. And, you know, I'd love to talk in so many directions, but many of my listeners have a lot of gut issues, right? So digestive issues from H. pylori and GERD or histamine issues to motility issues to SIBO to chronic yeast or persistent parasitic infections or a terrain full of toxicants that make everything kind of worse. So kind of maybe with that backdrop of, you know, the zoo being polluted and invaders and all of that, like, how does this symbiotic idea, you know, just walk us through how that relates?
Yeah, so the key thing is to think in terms of the entire gut as an ecosystem. Like, so, you know, microbiome researchers would say take an ecological perspective. And ecosystems are crazily complex, right? Even our zoo would be an amazingly complex ecosystem, never mind something like Yellowstone or, you know, some, you live in the Seattle area, like, you know, one of the pristine environments not too far from you. You know, so in our gut, so stepping back, an ecosystem is defined by the organisms that live in it, right? The plants and animals, the relationships those have. So think of like food webs and the web of life, the energy that flows through the ecosystem. So nutrition, waste products, you name it, as well as what would be called the abiota, like the non-living aspects, which could be like, think dead and decaying plant matter or, you know, dead animals or the minerals that are in the soil, right? So a healthy ecosystem needs all, right? It can't thrive if you remove any. Like if you remove the abiota, the dead and dying, most ecosystems descend into chaos pretty quickly. So putting things in the context of, you know, what's in the gut, the relationships and that energy flow, we have somewhere on average, maybe 1,000 different bacterial species, you know, not to mention like all the other, you know, types of organisms, like, you know, like they would call them phages, but, you know, fundamentally viruses and you name it that live there. Our second biggest, you know, nervous system, the enteric nervous system is in our gut, right? So there's, you know, now we're adding, you know, billions of neurons. The 70% roughly of the immune system lines the gut. So now you have all those immune cells that are fundamentally reaching into the gut to try to learn about the bacteria and other things passing through. Then you have, they would estimate over 100,000 metabolites that the gut microbiota make and release, you know, into that ecosystem and that circulation. Mm-hmm. So you're talking, it would be impossible to understand the relationships, right? So thinking you can control it is the wrong way to think. Think in terms of like, okay, how would you make Yellowstone a healthier ecosystem? You know, and one of the ways that we know that happened is when they reintroduced wolves to Yellowstone. And within a couple of years, I mean, there's videos on YouTube that you could look up and see, but it literally reshaped the course of rivers, introducing wolves back into that ecosystem. And wolves would be called a keystone species, but each ecosystem will have usually several species that are keystone. And what keystone means is these organisms are just way more important than all the other ones. So everything's important, mm-hmm. but these ones are disproportionately important. And so in the gut ecosystem, stepping back, right, how would you approach it? And so one way is, okay, let's make sure we're doing things to support the keystone species. And you know, so when I would have been in school, I was at naturopathic school in the early 90s, everyone would have said, oh, like the important organisms are lactobacilli and bifidobacteria. And that was because those were the only ones we knew to look for. They survive in oxygen, so we could find them in stools. But with genetic sequencing, what microbiome experts have found is those aren't keystone species. They're not unimportant, but there's ones that are much more like the wolves in Yellowstone. So those are things like Akkermansia and Faecalibacterium and Ruminococcus, which is a primary resistant starch degrader, getting back to that, right? So the key thing is, are we doing things to support the keystone species? And most of those things aren't available as probiotics. So the way you support them is by more the prebiotic or prebiotic-like thing, right? So resistant starch, we use something called Solnol. It's a resistant starch from unmodified potatoes. So it'd be thought of as resistant starch type 2. Resistant starch has 5 different varieties, but the retrograde, which I'm sure some of your listeners know, like when you refrigerate cooked rice or cooked potato and then take it out and eat it, that creates resistant starch type 3. So resistant starch type 2, really unmodified potatoes, green bananas are the 2 biggest food sources. So that feeds Akkermansia. So the Solnol that we use in a human study increased the abundance of that about 3.5-fold over 28 days, right? So that was a way to increase that keystone species without having to give that keystone species. And that's generally how it works. If we give foods that the organisms in our gut can thrive on, then more of them bloom. And so the key thing, if we want a diverse microbiome ecosystem, we want to make sure we're feeding it consistently a variety of things. Because as an example, the most common way probiotics are given would maybe be a massive dose of inulin or, you know, fructooligosaccharides or some other oligosaccharide type thing. And what that will happen, it will cause a lot more abundance of bifidobacteria because they thrive on it, but it will starve some other ones. So often what you'll see is a narrowing of the diversity in the gut microbiome. So when we created, or, you know, specifically me, put together Qualia Symbiotic, there's fibers for the resistant starch. There's something called baobab fruit, which is a main fiber that's used in some of the indigenous tribes in Africa. And baobab, like many fruits, has pectin. And pectins tend to really favor the growth of that fecal bacterium, keystone species. And then we have something called sun fiber, which is a super cool fiber that does do the bifidobacteria and some other species as well. And then we also have another resistant starch from tapioca. So we're giving like a range of things to be able to feed, in my analogy, more different types of animals at the zoo.
I love this. And we vary individually with what keystone species is important to us, or are keystones kind of the most important for everyone? I'm sure people are thinking that.
Yeah, so each of us would have an individual gut microbiome, and think of it as our fingerprint. So even if you had a genetically identical twin, the two of you would have different gut microbiome. And they would vary more and more over the course of your life just because of experiences and other things. Within that, so, you know, say we all have roughly 1,000 species, you know, we'll have a core in common. We'll have a lot that are unique to us. And I guess the way I would think of it is, you know, someone might be a tropical rainforest, someone else may be a savanna, but that ecosystem can work for them. But within all those, we would tend to have an overlap of the main keystone species. So Akkermansia would always be the keystone species in that mucin layer that keeps the gut lining and the barrier and, you know, think something that prevents leaky gut. You know, almost all humans will have some degree of fecal bacteria, but that Ruminococcus bromei was often thought of as the primary resistant starch consumer. We don't all have that. Like, I don't have that. At least the last time I did a biome test, I didn't have that. So some other species has now stepped into that niche in Greg's microbiome. To fill that role. So like I would say, getting back, short answer would be most of us probably have a similar suite of keystone species. And if we're missing one of the core ones, something else in our ecosystem is capable of taking up the slack. And unless they have the resources to thrive and become more abundant, we may not have enough of them to fulfill their role in the ecosystem.
Yeah, that's incredible. And so I have so many questions. One, you know, the biome test you mentioned, so you like biome, are there any other like GI tests if people want to know like what's going on in their gut, just real brief, you know, I know people are thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of good ones. I'm sure you have a whole suite of ones that you've used. Like way back in the day, it was Great Smokies and then everyone else, you know, and, you know, now there's, you know, some wonderful ones. But biome, you know, we're, as a company, we've been friendly with them. We've had the founder on our podcast and, you know, and they're doing great things. So the key thing just to take away, no matter what you do, just remember your ecosystem is your ecosystem. Trying to compare yours against some theoretical ideal is not useful, right? Because,
the reference ranges don't always reflect that, you know, too probably. Yeah, so that's a good reminder.
Yeah.
And then how does like gut dysbiosis, is that an assault or a threat on our keystone bacteria, or, you know, just any because again, I know my patients and people are thinking like, okay, you know, I have all this like, you know, candida, or I have all this, you know, just bloating and SIBO, or, you know, like, is it like the keystone shifted to allow that to happen, or did those invaders suppress our keystone, or is it both?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure it's many different things, but before we jump into that, just getting back to that idea of testing. So one of the key things, if an ecologist was looking at Yellowstone, they wouldn't, you know, they might test soil and other things, but fundamentally at the big picture level, they're looking at how the whole system behaves. And the great thing with our GI is there's just the common symptom questionnaires that you and I would have used in practice, right? That give great insight. Like, you know, they'll ask questions that are upper GI related and lower GI. And then, you know, things like, you know, that you can parse further into like, you know, struggling with slow stools or quick transit or things like that. So, and there's also the gut brain, like and when I think of the brain end of the gut brain axis, the main area that's been studied would be stress and mood, you know, so those two areas, right? Like, so if we do an intervention into that system and good things happen in especially both of those, then we know we did something that's improving the health of that ecosystem. So often before jumping to testing, I would just say, okay, let's do these questionnaires before and after. Let's intervene with something like quiet symbiotic and let's see what happens. And what we've seen, at least in our studies, is that somewhere in the range of 60 to 70% improvement in GI symptoms within 2 weeks, usually. So, you know, doesn't mean everyone will get that much, but, you know, if someone didn't, then maybe the next step is testing. So, and now getting back to the dysbiosis. So dysbiosis can mean a lot of things depending. Like in aging, dysbiosis really means there's a shift, right? In the zoo, like some of the cages are empty, some are overpopulated with things you may not want there, right? And in general, that would be true of any age. And some of it would be like they've done experience on the microbiome in more indigenous tribes, people, hunter-gatherers, people more in the rainforest. And they just have a much more diverse system than we, meaning if we have on average 1,000 different species, they may have, you know, 1,500, right? They just have more things that we've lost over time. And, you know, we can obviously do things through life that could cause us to lose even more. And the way I've heard it described that I think is useful is, you know, like say an antibiotic, you took a course of those and you needed them. That was great. But that's almost like a wildfire that just, you know, destroyed part of the ecosystem. So now it's a question of what's growing back the quickest. Was it the things that were there before, or were there weeds that opportunistically now outcompete? And once something outcompetes, then it can be challenging because the system, you know, is intended to be stable, like unstable during the formative years. So there's a, think of like a newborn baby's ecosystem as what happens if you just clear cut an entire thing. Like, you know, it's just really rapidly overturning over like a lactobacillus wave comes in, then bifidobacteria. But by about 5 or 6, theirs is fairly stable. And by the time we're adults, our ecosystem is very stable. So the question is, you know, often are there things that have disrupted a part of it, right? Kind of got a foothold where they shouldn't. And I think the key thing still is to always go back to first principles, which are let's make the whole ecosystem healthier. Let's give it all the resources. And if that's not working, then, you know, the next step. But quite often that works so much better than people expect. So.
Yeah. No, I'm super curious. And I'm just thinking from, you know, my community and my listeners' perspective. So, you know, sometimes there's like fear of like new product or maybe some of their sensitivities that in my opinion are transient, but they're, you know, cautious because of all the trauma they've gone through in their, you know, health, right? And so some of these awesome ingredients that you've described for the, you know, prebiotics, and I just to say, like, I actually have steered away from prebiotics before. I've kind of listened to kind of your product and, you know, what you're sharing, because the, you know, the inulin, the FOS, like people would just bloat or it, like it'd be okay and then it wouldn't. And, you know, it was just not in my patients.
Yeah,
you know,
I just. Even in studies, it's super consistent. Yeah. And you would know the term FODMAP, some of the listeners might, but a lot of people are sensitive to what are thought of as FODMAP. And FODMAP stands, the F and O is fermentable oligosaccharides. So those are your inulin, your GOS, FOS, XOS. Anything with the O as a prebiotic.
Yep.
The D is disaccharides, right? So some people, you know, simple sugars, right? That combination, that D disaccharide is for that, you know. The M is for monosaccharides, but particularly it's, so lactose would be an example of a disaccharide. The M, monosaccharides, but it's usually fructose, right? That people with FODMAP issues are sensitive to. And then the A and P are and polyols, and polyols are your alcohol sugars. So one of the things I know when I created Quiosynbiotic was we only put fibers in it that were FODMAP friendly because we wanted it to be useful for even the more sensitive people, not something that only someone with a cast iron gut would benefit from.
Yeah.
So, and then it's always useful, you know, in my experience, just start with a lower serving if you're in doubt and be cautious, right? Work your way up. That's usually the best way, you know, in many respects when we're giving a new food supply to something. Now, certain organisms that might have been starving are going to start to grow and outcompete, and there'll be metabolites they make that you may not be used to, right? And that if you're gradual, it'll be much more comfortable.
Yeah, I know that's always good tips. And I have a lot of sensitive patients, and we just start small and, you know, just work our way up. And, you know, I've been humbled by what's one person's dose is not another's. And, you know, sometimes a little bit does the job while people are getting better.
Yeah.
So we talked about the pre part of the symbiotics. So tell us about, you know, the other ingredients and the other, you know, part of this.
Yeah. Formula. So I think postbiotics are super cool and they're such a new thing. So again, postbiotics would be the inactivated probiotic bacteria, or, you know, think of those as broken up. And the way, the main area those have been studied for is immunity. So this is obviously not like technically accurate, but think of as things are passing through your gut or the bacteria that are near the lining, it's almost like immune cells are reaching out, grabbing them to get to learn and know them better. And a live probiotic would be like a kicking and screaming baby. A postbiotic, the inactivated one, would be like a doll. Right. So it's easier to learn the features of the doll in a friendly way than try to like hold the struggling thing. So postbiotics are super important because they fulfill that abiotic role, that like dead, decaying thing that you need for a healthy ecosystem. So the way that I went about putting those in is we have a 10 berry fermented blend that's now had the organisms inactivated. We have a fermented turmeric that's also inactivated. And we have a fermented tea, a kombucha, blend that's got the fermented kombucha that it's stabilized with apple cider vinegar. That's what they use to help inactivate the bacteria. And then it's also, that's got the tapioca resistant starch that encapsulates it and keeps it nice and, you know, stable to air. And so those 10 postbiotic foods give not only a variety of polyphenols and fibers, but they're giving, you know, a couple billion inactivated bacteria that our immune system can learn in a friendly way. And, you know, so much of good balanced immune response is teaching the immune system in a way that it doesn't overreact to. And one of my concerns has always been people tend to think like an idea of more is better. So I see many probiotic products. Yeah. Oh, we have 40 billion live CFU of bacteria. And it's like, you think that might be too many, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like that, like, you know, maybe you're going to overstress that system, where a much lower live, but with inactivated, I think you give a broader and more like easier thing. Like you're doing the benefits of the pro, but you're doing also that postbiotic piece. So, and I think the best way to do postbiotics for, you know, in a general sense for everyone is to do them as the fermented foods and get the whole kit and caboodle, right? The polyphenols, the other great compounds that would be in something like turmeric or tea.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. You know, are people who are sensitive to fermented foods, would they be sensitive to the fermented postbiotic?
We haven't seen that. We've so far seen the Qualia Symbiotic is really very well tolerated, but in part it's probably because the amount of, so I mean it's a maybe a gram of the fermented kombucha, you know, a few hundred milligrams of the fermented berry blend and the fermented turmeric, so it's not crazy high amounts of these foods for even a sensitive person.
Awesome. Yeah, we're just talking to sensitive people, so I just, you know, want to make sure they feel comfortable. And then, you know, and when you talk about like the postbiotics, I'm reminded like of immunotherapies or isopathy, or like, you know, back in the day when pleocyanin was different, like the bioregulatory medicine kind of perspective of, yeah, giving like dead bugs to the body in different ways are could help stimulate an immune response or kind of a recognition.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's awesome to kind of have this be brought back, you know, to the supplement industry, because I think it's really important.
Yeah, it's the, I mean, really, it's the surface things, right, on cells that the immune system learns from. It just has to feel those patterns correctly, right? The thing underneath doesn't need to be live. And like I mentioned, often, you know, live, too much live can overstimulate or cause it to struggle to learn, where, you know, the postbiotics, you know, many of the studies actually came out of Japan and have been for things like seasonal allergies and other immune related. So I just think to get that best gut immune axis response, postbiotics do a much better job in general in a friendlier way than the probiotics.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I have a lot of patients who are histamine intolerant or on the spectrum of mast cell activation. And I was just thinking that these are states you can shift and you can reduce sensitivity. I've seen that in my patients. And so, you know, while we're kind of stabilizing their mast cells to get to the underlying cause, this could be like another mechanism to actually reduce like the reason why they're sensitive or more atopic allergic TH2 dominant. Would have you seen that? I'm sure you've seen that.
We don't work as much, you know, since we're a supplement company, you know, we wouldn't be on the front lines like you are with people like that. So, you know, in our studies, you know, I haven't seen that, but we don't necessarily, we tend to recruit people that have somewhere between a moderate and a high amount of GI issues, but not crazy high enough that, you know, it would be a concern for them to be in a study.
Yeah.
And, you know, immunity is not something we've tracked per se so far. And then a last piece that we have, and you started earlier, right? There's upper GI symptoms, right? And then there's lower.
Yeah.
And the gut microbiome is your classic lower, you know, it's the lower ecosystem. Mm-hmm. But if you thought of Yellowstone, there's the Yellowstone down by the rivers, but they're fed by the runoff from the ecosystems above them, right? In the mountains. And our gut microbiome is no different, right? It's the upper GI digestion determines in many ways how well the lower. So we put a clinically studied blend of digestive enzymes because those just do a great job to support that upper GI function.
Yeah, I think that's really important. You know, it's the whole tract, right? You know, and what I am seeing the formula in front of me here. What about the bacillus spores or the bacillus?
Yeah, so think of there being, you know, like, so live probiotics, again, great, but there's a couple challenges with live probiotics. One is that, you know, they're usually grown on, you know, what would be the equivalent of their zoo, right? Their home. And then before they're putting in a supplement, they're separated from that, right? So they're already stressed, which is one of the reasons that it's recommended you refrigerate them. So live generally come with that need to refrigerate. To live, when you put into a powder mixture like Qualia Symbiotic, that's opened and closed and opened and closed over the course of maybe a month while you're taking it. You know, these fragile things struggle to survive. And, you know, so one from a stability, a shelf stability, not needing to refrigerate, spore ones are just far superior. The next thing is most live bacteria aren't particularly resilient to stomach acid, bile acids. So the vast majority get killed in transit, which doesn't mean they're not beneficial, but it's part of the reason you will see like 10 or 20 billion CFU because you often need to give high amounts. Where spore are really resilient. Think of spore form probiotics as almost being like a seed that once it's in the right environment and it's watered, then it blooms and blossoms. So spore are much better for a product like Qualia Symbiotic that we want to be shelf stable, that's more food-like, you know, mixed in with these, you know, fermented foods, the prebiotic fibers. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is spore probiotics just work great. So it might, I was a student rep for Thorne back in 95 and 96, and then worked full time for them before I practiced. And at the time, Thorne only had one probiotic. And I was like, that's crazy talk. You're such a big company. How come you don't have like all these different ones? And it was one called Lactospore. And the reason is Lactospore just works great. It's a great probiotic. It does most of the things. And it's, you know, the spore name, it's a spore, Bacillus coagulans. And one of the things that I really wanted to do for Qualia Symbiotic was have what I think of as a psychobiotic. And psychobiotic, think of as a subset of probiotics that has an impact both in the gut and in the brain. So usually for GI symptoms and mood symptoms. And Lactospore has one of the best studies where over the course of 3 months, it made huge differences both in GI issues and in mood performance. So. And the other great thing about spore forms is you don't have to do 10 or 20 billion CFUs. You just have to, usually, like Lactospore in studies, 2 billion is the most that ever been needed in a study. So that's the amount we put in our product.
Yeah, no, I love the spore biotics when they became more available in recent years and more popular. It was like finally a probiotic people felt better from, you know, like you could see, you know, the difference. So that's awesome. You added those in. So have we missed anything with the formula? Anything else that...
The other couple of things are more like what I think of as accessory ingredients. So we have something called N-acetylglucosamine, which mm-hmm. I'm sure well familiar with. And the reason is we wanted to support Akkermansia. I mentioned that. And Solnol does that. But Akkermansia's main food supply would be the mucins that are gut lining cells make and secrete. And mucins are mucopolysaccharides is what they stand for. And the end sugar on those or amino sugar is always N-acetylglucosamine. And that mm-hmm. just ends up being like a crucial thing for Akkermansia. That's one of its favorite foods. So we put that in. But I know just in practice years ago, you know, I would use NAG is the abbreviation because it's very healing mm-hmm. for the intestinal lining. Yeah. So that's in it.
Yeah.
We have something called Selastris in it, which is an Ayurvedic seed extract that is usually thought of as a something for mental clarity. It's used, the tree's common name is intellect tree, which gives kind of a sense of how they used it. But the other big use was for GI issues. And its actions have to do with the acetylcholine signaling system, which is the main vagus nerve signaling thing between the gut and the brain. So we have that in there for that. And then we have something called Aquamin, which is a magnesium from deep sea water off the coast of Ireland, but it also comes with over 70 trace minerals. And the way I think of it in Yellowstone, the reason it thrives in part is because the soil is really healthy, and it's healthy because of all the, you know, basically the inorganic matter in it, right? The minerals. And it's mm-hmm. the same with our gut microsystem. It also needs those inorganic things to thrive. So we wanted to supply some magnesium. Most people are, you know, don't get quite enough. So it's not a big dose. I think it's only 8% of the DV of magnesium in the product, but mostly I wanted to make sure we gave all the trace minerals so that the soil in your gut microbiome, so to speak, would be well nourished to support a healthier, thriving ecology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're so depleted, you know, in our diet and, you know, like these days with minerals, I put people on minerals all the time. So I think that's awesome. I've noticed with the products that you guys create and you create, you know, they're very like robust, but, you know, it seems like you very much are methodical and think through each ingredient, and the synergy of the ingredients, you know, is really, you know, unique, I would say. You know, a lot of people put 4 or 5 ingredients tops, you know, so is that part of your ethos or just kind of how you like to formulate?
Yeah. So we would think of ourselves as the complex system science approach, right? So, you know, thinking of an ecosystem, that's like, you know, kind of how mm-hmm. our company is slanted anyways. And so often to, you know, like create health in any system, it requires, I guess, always one of my thoughts is, you know, health is, you know, super complicated, but ultimately, like, relatively, you know, simple rules of thumb, right? Like, make sure the system has all the resources it needs and get rid of obstacles for it using those to thrive. And if both of those two things happen, typically good things occur over time. And, you know, most of the things, whether it's our brain or gut microbiome or, you know, some other system Qualia has designed a product for, require a fair amount of resources. So giving 1 or 2, 3, maybe 4 things often isn't quite enough to mm-hmm. give it all the things it would need to really thrive. And so, you know, that's at the end of the day, you know, I always view my job as, let me, you know, give all the resources, help whoever I'm working with to remove obstacles that might be in the mm-hmm. way of their health, and then just trust that their system's going to do good things for them over time.
Yeah. That's naturopathic medicine, right? Believing mm-hmm. in the body's innate intelligence, right? And that there's just in modern life and just being a human in today's world, there are a lot of obstacles and, you know, finding a doctor or a protocol that's going to, you know, really just remove rather than kill, treat, you know, like just try to dictate health. It's something that emerges when, you know, obstacles are removed. I love how you said that. And I'm very aligned with that philosophy.
Oh, and I was just going to say one other thing and just think, like, every ecosystem to thrive needs enough energy passing through it.
Right? Yeah.
And the truth is that many of us, like, our gut microbes rely on us and what we eat for the vast majority of that energy. Yeah. Passing through. And so much of our food, you know, so think even like, you know, like a chicken, like homogenized chicken, like as meat, right? That's been made so the texture is really easy to chew versus, you know, chicken that had gristle or something, right? Yeah. All these things that would give texture to food would survive more to get to the gut microbiome and be used for the organisms that can mm-hmm. metabolize them. And so, you know, in general, what we've seen and what makes sense to me is that just adding more appropriate amounts of energy into the gut microbiome, you will generally see good things start to happen over time. And so the key thing is being able to give that energy in ways that are tolerable for the more sensitive clients mm-hmm. that are listening and the ones that you work with.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I'm excited to try this with patients and just, you know, I'm confident, you know, I'm more confident with my sensitive folks that we can find a dose and, you know, they have a lot of tools because, you know, they have a complexity. I mean, I remember seeing one person's, I don't know, it's the microbiome labs lab test and she had like almost 0 Akkermansia. Yeah. And so it's just like, of course, you know, and she's had, you know, repetitive food poisoning and inflammation because of it. And so I No, I love how you're thinking, and I'm a terrain doctor. I'm all about, you know, how do we empower and support our terrain so that we can be more resilient in life. So this feels very aligned. And you know, I am so glad that we connected today, Dr. Greg. Is there anything else left on your heart or anything else that you'd love to share before we wrap?
Yeah, I would just say for the people that are listening and are more curious to learn about things in Qualia Symbiotic or my thoughts on, you know, just even describing the gut ecosystem, I wrote a fairly long blog. So by fairly long, it's long.
Yeah.
Probably a 20-minute read that's on the neurohacker.com website. And it's something like, you know, Qualia Symbiotic, the formulator's view.
Awesome.
Or, you know, like, but anyways, it goes into that, you know, idea of an ecosystem and then describes each of the ingredients in, but why we would have chose to include them and, you know, what they contribute. So for the people that, you know, their curiosity is piqued and they want to learn more, that's a great resource.
Awesome. I'm glad you created that. And no, thank you so much for the work you're doing. And thank you for your time and educating all of us and, you know, allowing our gut ecosystems to thrive. So thank you so much for being on the podcast. And any other links or anything you want to share for people to find you?
So neurohacker.com is our website. We're most active on Instagram. So we put a lot of content there for people that are interested. And most of it's, you know, brain related, longevity related, gut related. With Twitter, we don't have many followers, but I'm the one that actually runs the X or old Twitter thing. So, and Neurohacker is our brand, but think of Qualia as, you know, the product line is Qualia. And I understand we're going to be changing the name of the company sometime over the summer to be Qualia, just because it's always been confusing to people. Like, are you Qualia or Neurohacker? I don't really understand. Yeah. So, yeah. And then just the last thing for the people listening is, you know, the gut, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, prebiotics, probiotics, but there's so many things that outside of that, that are impacting it, right? So stress and sleep and, you know, all the other things. And just think when you eat. So I mentioned our VP of marketing has the two young daughters, one's 5. So I did the zoo story to her mom. She did it to the 5-year-old. And when I saw the 5-year-old, she's like, Dr. Greg, tell me what I need to eat to feed the animals in my tummy. Yeah. And so we don't only rely on something like Qualia Symbiotic. The key thing to think about is when you're choosing foods to eat, are there going to be things in that meal that are likely to get, you know, some of that energy into the ecosystem, right? So, you know, if you're eating meat, like the grizzle, the, like all the things that give texture to meat would mean more that survives and gets down there. You know, obviously, you know, many of us, you know, your listeners largely probably are getting enough fiber, but, you know, the majority of people in North America aren't, right? And so just, you know, always think in terms of, okay, I'm eating for me, but it's also important that I eat for them.
Yeah, I love it. My daughter, she's only 5 and a half, almost 6. And I try to teach her how her body works. And I've talked about the gut microbiome and gut bugs and things like that. And she tells me sometimes, like, my gut bugs, like, want steak tonight. You know, she talks, like, you know, from her microbiome's perspective of her food desires. And that's really the truth, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's definitely thought among some of the more well-respected microbiome scientists that, you know, like, as an example, once the organisms that have really thrived on resistant starch have grown accustomed to getting it, they'll nudge us to get more, right? Like, and maybe it's, you know, potato salad, that's been their way of getting that. We'll start to crave potato salad if they haven't got their food in a few days.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. They're directing us always.
Absolutely.
Yeah, tend to your gut ecosystem so, you know, you can be in greater alignment, right? So, well, this was really informative to me and I really am grateful for your time today and thanks for educating all of us and thanks for being on the podcast.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Spectrum of Health podcast. I hope you enjoyed my conversation today with Dr. Gregory Kelly. Check out all the information about his new product, Qualia Symbiotic, and let me know how it goes. I'm super interested to start introducing this into my own practice and my own body. And I hope that you found this informative and it propels you on your path to healing. I hope you have a beautiful day and thank you so much for listening.